This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for listening to Talk Louisiana. It's Friday Politics on WRKF and WWNO, and we're slated to begin our show today with John Stefanski, the state rep running for Attorney General, who was the mastermind behind the congressional redistricting plan that is now in the courts. But we have a guest who has come forward in the last few hours to take Stefanski's place, and I think most of us know him well. We are visiting with the Attorney General of the state of Louisiana, Jeffrey Martin Landry, also the front runner in the race for governor, and we are 22 days from the October 14th primary. We have a few matters to discuss with him in our time. As General Landry, the Attorney General of Louisiana, is headed for DeRidder. He is making the rounds and has been doing this for well over a year now. And as we look at the campaign in the last few days, there have been some huge developments. And perhaps the most notable endorsements that are coming fast and furious. And this week, Richard Nelson got out of the race. He was one of the first in as well, the lawmaker from St. Tammany, and he endorsed Jeff Landry. I think he is viewed as a, quote, moderate Republican. You are probably viewed as more on the right side of the spectrum, but you and Richard Nelson must have something in common, or he would not have given you his endorsement. What happened?
Yeah, look, you know, I think Richard's he is an extremely smart and articulate fellow. You know, I view Richard really more kind of towards the libertarian side, and there's a part of me that appreciates that. You know, when I was in Congress, I scored, I think, a 99% with campaign for liberty, you know, because I think his political ideology, like you said, is extremely broad. We had a great conversation. I think he look, you know, him and his wife. I mean, they got three young kids, and this is brutal. You know, Jim, getting on the political trail. This is a huge state to travel around. A lot of different factions that exist inside the state that you have to kind of pull yourself together, kind of thread together. And look, I appreciate the man in the arena. You know, he put himself out there. They went out there. He put a message out there. He realized, he's like, look, you know, I did the best I could. I think things are just not working as well as I'd like them to do. But you know what? I certainly have always appreciated and respected, I guess, me. We had a great conversation, and he decided to endorse us. And look, we are extremely thrilled about it. I mean, again, I think that he is extremely intelligent, very articulate, and really understands, especially on tax policy. I mean, he's got a good grip of the problems that we have in this state from a tax infrastructure side, and just, we certainly appreciate his endorsement.
Well, and sounds like if the two of you could work it out, he might be a good person in your administration if that happens. But you also got the nod from Steve Scalise, the highly touted and powerful number two person in the Republican majority in the U.S. House, a place where you once served. And Steve Scalise's endorsement isn't like getting an endorsement from some alderman in a small parish. He is a guy with some cachet and, I think, immense popularity. Your thoughts about him deciding to go with you?
Well, I can tell you, you know, Steve Scalise is the happiest warrior I know in the country. And him and I have had a great relationship. He was an unbelievable mentor to me when I went into Congress in 2010. He was always there to help me out and to try to keep me sometimes successfully, sometimes not, from stepping into things I probably shouldn't have. But he's also been a champion for Louisiana. And we've just been so honored and humbled to have his endorsement. You know, this election is at a pivotal time, Jim. You know, I've been going around the state and saying it. I can't remember the last time when we visited on the radio, but you know, Bloomberg not too long ago just reported that $100 billion worth of wealth has been transferred. Individual wealth has been transferred from blue states to the South, and we're not getting any of those people. Now, this isn't businesses that are moving. This isn't corporations that are moving. These individuals, maybe they're high net worth, maybe they're middle class, maybe they're just working folks that are just looking for a place where freedom goes to live. They're looking for a better place to raise a family, a safer place. And they're coming over to the South, and we want to capture some of that. And that's why I think that this election is so pivotal for the state. And I think Steve recognizes that. And him and I have spoke many, many times. And we look forward to having him help us turn this state around.
Now, one of your opponents, Stephen Wagespack, garnered the endorsement of NOLA.com, the Picayune. I don't know that that is a huge surprise, but back in the day, that used to carry a lot of clout. It certainly helped Buddy Romer. It probably catapulted him into the mansion. But is it something that bothers you, or is this just dust that you'll get off your shoulder when you move down the line as you campaign today and between now and October 14?
Well, Jim, if I'd have woke up and NOLA.com endorsed me, I'd have to check my pulse. They have never really been very favorable to me, even through the 8 years that I've been attorney general. It really doesn't come as much of a surprise to me. Let me say this all along. We have never been focused on anyone else in this race. We announced in October of last year. It took a lot of people a long time to get into the race. It doesn't matter to me. We were committed. I gave up the best job I've ever had, ever. I mean, being attorney general has been like one of the greatest opportunities to work with some of the greatest people I've ever met. And so we're focused on moving the state forward. We're focused on crime. We're focused on education. And we're focused on the economy. I don't know what NOLA.com's focused on, but that matter to me. I'm focused on voters.
All right. Today, a headline above the fold in New Orleans and in Baton Rouge and across the state, Landry wants to delay the sale of Blue Cross. AG says deal should wait until new administration is in place. Blue Cross Blue Shield of Louisiana has 92,000 policyholders in the state, and it is a major player in the world of insurance. And Jeff Landry, your thoughts about Blue Cross and the proposed acquisition from the country's largest for-profit insurer, one of them, Elevance Health. What do you think?
Yeah, I'm going to tell you, Jim, I still have a day job, right? In all the campaigning, the people, I got a contract with the people of the state of Louisiana to be their attorney general. This transaction has concerned me in a couple of ways. It is going to be the largest transaction that has the greatest effect on our health insurance in this state. Maybe you could go back and find out when there was a transaction that has the potential to impact healthcare in Louisiana and a greater than this one. And so we've raised a couple of questions and some concerns. I outlined it in a letter that I think I sent to the Joint Insurance Committee and to the Department of Insurance. As the Attorney General, I'm tasked with protecting our consumers and enforcing antitrust and Louisiana's unfair trade practices laws. And so we want to make sure that if this transaction happens, that it's done in a manner that the healthcare, that the impact to healthcare in Louisiana is going to be positive, not negative. Because we can't, it's not like we've got this unbelievable healthy population. It's not like we've got a lot of like we're on all of the great list when it comes to healthcare metrics. And so we can't afford to make a mistake. And so all, as you can see in the letter that I put out back then was that, look, we've got some questions. I think they should slow the process down. I think it's only fair. We got a new insurance commissioner coming in. We got a new governor coming in. We've got a new attorney general coming in. And I think that that if they can answer those questions, then those folks who are coming into the new administration should have an opportunity to have a say in it. And so that's what we've been saying all along.
And I mentioned 92,000 policyholders. Blue Cross actually has almost 2 million people in our state with some form of insurance. So it is a huge juggernaut, and this certainly would affect a lot of people. And all right. Well, we will hear from Jeff Landry. We do have to take a break, Robin Dow reminds me, but we will hear from Jeff Landry. We'll also get the governor's take. He was speaking about a court action by the attorney general this week, and the governor did so on his Wednesday show, Ask the Governor. As we know, in the final days of his administration, John Bel Edwards has called for people on death row in our state to be moved to cells for life rather than wait a execution date. He says it's a flawed system that is antiquated and overdue for extinction. And we'll talk more with General Landry when we return after this. This is Jim Inkster. You are listening to Talk Louisiana, and as mentioned, the Attorney General of Louisiana, Jeff Landry, who is running for governor, has joined us on short notice after an abrupt cancellation this morning from John Stefanski, who's running to succeed Jeff Landry as the state's top law enforcement officer. Landry is on the campaign trail, traveling to DeRidder as we speak. And he has been in the news, not only on the Blue Cross situation, but he has gone to court to try to stop John Bel Edwards, along with five district attorneys, and one of those, Hiller Moore from Baton Rouge, is slated to be with us in short order. But they don't like Governor Edwards trying to provide clemency for some death row inmates to commute sentences for 20 prisoners awaiting execution. And on his show, before we get to General Landry, before we get to him, here is John Bel Edwards 2 days ago on Ask the Governor commenting about the court action from a guy who I think can be termed a nemesis to the sitting governor, Jeffrey Martin Landry.
Yeah, I haven't made any changes at the Board of Pardons or asked them to change their rules. As you notice, as we discussed, a number of death row inmates have filed petitions to pursue commutations of their sentence to life without parole. None of them are seeking to get out. There's nothing in the rules that govern the conduct of the Board of Pardons that says they can't hear those applications. So I'm not sure what grounds the Attorney General is pointing to. I know the letter he sent to the Pardon Board just couldn't have been more wrong. I'm optimistic because he's not going to find a judge who is as ignorant of the law as he is, and he's not going to find one who is more politically motivated than he is either.
Attorney General Jeff Landry and district attorneys from five parishes have petitioned courts to halt clemency proceedings. Governor John Bel Edwards has recommended that those on death row be moved from what would amount to a date for execution to a prison cell for life. But it has caused some pushback, and it has been done in the final days of the administration of John Bel Edwards. Your assessment of where we are on this?
Yeah, look, there's a lot of litigation flying around. You know, we filed suit this week as well as a number of district attorneys around the state. Again, you know, let me remind you, Jim, we've got three cities in the top 10 most dangerous cities in the country. New Orleans just made the top 10 most dangerous cities in the world, the only United States city to make that. And it's disappointing for the governor to try to exert some influence over the pardon and parole board to basically take these 56 cases and have them cut the line, you know. There's a process that the pardon board has, and they've laid it out. It's been in existence for a while now. They've got their rules. They don't have a way to short circuit those rules. It's done for a purpose, and so I think that's one of the problems. The next problem is that, look, we forget about the victims. You know, 4 years ago we held a hearing on capital punishment over at the Capitol. We brought the families of victims of those folks who were sitting on death row, the impact that they had on those victims' families. And let me remind everyone out there that, you know, in a capital case, the jury has to be unanimous, not once, but twice. So it's not just 12 votes, right? It's 24. Those jurors have to vote twice in unanimity, one to convict, two to give them the death penalty. And then there's an exhaustive appeals process that all of these families have to go back and relive some of the most heinous crimes out there. And so I just don't think it speaks well when we say, look, the state has given you a contractual obligation. We're going to give you this justice. And then the governor says, but we're going to let these folks who impacted your lives in a negative way skip the line.
Well, General, we'll let you continue your trek to DeRidder, Attorney General Jeff Landry, and we look forward to visiting with you again soon, and best of luck to you as we approach the finish line. I, as you said, Richard Nelson, we commend anybody who gets in the arena, and running for governor isn't it isn't beanbag. It's a tough thing. Thank you, General Landry. It was a Freudian slip, but you are the front runner. Since I said it yesterday on this show, Mark Ballard of the Advocate in Picayune, he said we're definitely looking at the inevitability of Governor Jeff Landry. Do you see it that way as we head down the stretch?
Not at all. I'm not taking anything for granted. We're going to continue to move around the state. We're going to continue to move this message. Because, look, the one thing is that we want to win. And when hopefully, we win, we want people to be so invested in the campaign that they're now invested in their government, right? Because from the beginning, we've always said this race is not about me. It's about them. And so, Jim, we're going to work all the way until the bell rings.
All right. Well, Robin Dow reminded me of an appearance you had a few months ago in which you said you would govern as the people of Louisiana want you to. So obviously you believe you're in sync with the people. What do you think the general philosophy of most of the people in the state is?
Look, I think the general philosophy of the people in the state is really the general philosophy of what being an American is. Look, they want government to go out there and to provide basic functions of public safety, roads, bridges, services like that, and take care of them and do it in a manner under which we prioritize those things at the least cost to the taxpayer in the most efficient manner. Louisiana has always been a great, very diverse, multicultural state, and we intend to govern it just like that. But we're gonna start to move ourselves to the top, and we're not taking the bottom. We're not staying there anymore, Jim. It's time for us to make our move.
But it's fair to say that in your assessment, and you probably have, based on recent electoral trends, votes to back it, you believe the state is a conservative state, don't you?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, absolutely. And I'll tell you something else too, Jim. If you look around with states that are governing in that manner, all of those states are beating us. All of those states have more people moving in than moving out. $100 billion, that's a lot of money. And I think that Louisiana is right in sync with all the other states in the SEC. It's just time for us to move from the bottom to the top.
Thank you, Attorney General Jeff Landry. See you soon. And the election's 22 days away. 22, so we would encourage people to vote. There's a strong possibility that more than half the voters in our state, as it was 4 years ago when we had a highly competitive race, won't vote in the October 14th primary. But let's hope we change that. And in Louisiana, about a half million more people voted for president in 2020, which was not a close race, with President Trump winning over Joe Biden by 400,000 votes in our state. Then voted in the governor's race a year before with John Bel Edwards squeaking by Eddie Rasponi by 40,000 votes. In a few moments, we are slated to hear from Hiller Moore, the district attorney, East Baton Rouge Parish, and also for a few with Bob Mann, the author of Kingfish U, the esteemed professor from Louisiana State University's Manship School. And LSU dropped in the college rankings. U.S. News & World Report has LSU at 185. Tulane also dropped in the ratings from number 44 to number 73, and Tulane officials took direct aim at the U.S. News rankings. This statement, this iteration of U.S. News annual exercise highlights the shortcomings of attempting to numerically rank universities with vastly different missions, sizes, locations, and student populations. Students should be cautious about using a one-size-fits-all ranking to help determine where they'll attend college. LSU ranked 13th out of 14 SEC schools. Only Mississippi State finished behind Louisiana State University. Vanderbilt, number 18, Florida, 28th. Georgia is 47th, and it's Auburn, number 93. Tennessee, 105. Missouri, 124, tied with South Carolina. Kentucky, 159. Ole Miss, 163. Alabama, 170. Arkansas, 178. LSU, 185. And Mississippi State, number 216. So, is this important? Does it really matter? But we'll talk with Bob Mann about what's happening at the Old War School. He's an authority on what's happening now, as the library is in a deplorable condition. And what happened then, as Huey Pierce Long in the 1920s and 30s built LSU into a world-renowned academic and athletic powerhouse. We're back with more Talk Louisiana after this timeout. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana. 877-217-5757 is your number. That's 877-217-5757. Robin Dow, our producer, is at the ready. If you'd like to send emails, we always welcome them at talk@talklouisiana.org. We're joined by Robert Townley Mann, the esteemed professor of journalism, mass communication at LSU School of Mass Communication, the Manship School, and the author of Kingfish U, the latest of a number of well-received and well-decorated books written by Bob. And this one is about Huey Long's impact on Louisiana State University, an impact that still resonates 88 years after the death of the Kingfish. But the Kingfish would not be happy today, as LSU is ranked 13th out of 14 SEC schools by U.S. News and World Report, number 185, down from 176. And as noted, Tulane also took a dive, going from 44th nationally to 73rd. And Tulane doesn't like it and has fought back, saying that this is not really a valid assessment. But, Bob, sometimes these things matter. How much do they matter?
I think for a school, well, good morning first, Jim, and good to be with you. I think for a school like LSU, it probably doesn't matter as much as it matters to a school like Tulane. If you're going to go to Tulane, you're going to be paying a pretty steep tuition bill, and you're going to want to know that you're getting, quote unquote, your money's worth for that tuition. LSU's tuition is relatively low, and with TOPS, a lot of young people can come to this state and get a really good education for not a lot of money, relatively speaking, especially compared to Tulane, so it probably won't hurt LSU as much as it hurts the privates, who really have to work hard to prove that they're a good value for all that money.
Well, I know this is a sensitive subject for the president of the LSU, William Tate. He exploded in an interview with Corey Johnson several months ago when Corey Johnson asked him about a low rating from U.S. News and World Report and some other entities, and the president is right that LSU is exceptional in some areas, mass communication being one of them, but as a whole, this particular entity, which is well regarded, has LSU ranked 13th out of 14 SEC schools. I remember President Tate, Bob, even saying to Corey that you couldn't even get into LSU now. I can check. I know. And I thought that was a bit much, but I'm not sure the president of LSU could get into LSU now. I don't know if I could. And I enrolled in 1977. For what it's worth, the ACT scores and the student body, the GPAs in high schools, they've all gone up in recent time.
Well, they have, and it is harder to get into the school. You've got to have the scores. You've got to have the ACT scores and the GPA. To get into school, there are a lot of young people who are getting into LSU, and really good young people, good students. We've had a huge incoming freshman class here, and over the last 5 or 6 years, those classes have gotten bigger and bigger and bigger. And a lot of people worried that we were letting in students who couldn't make it. And it turns out those students are really good students, because we were looking at them more holistically, looking at really assessing their potential in different ways than just looking at a number. And I think it's helped those young people to get a good education at a good value at LSU, but it's also helped LSU increase its enrollment.
And Tulane, through the years, has produced graduates who have succeeded all over this country of ours. It's a great university. LSU has done the same. And As one who went to Louisiana State University, I'm appreciative of professors like Lou Day, who last night was inducted in the Journalism Hall of Fame, long overdue, 35 years at Louisiana State University for Dr. Day before he retired in 2016. And Bob, I saw him early this morning at the grocery store, and he told me that two of the other inductees last night noted that they were flunked by him and in his law class.
And one of them is a university president.
That
now.
Is correct. Which tells you that they don't cut any slack in some places at LSU. You don't get A's just by showing up. Sometimes you got to work for it, and Lou Day is one of those who made you work for it. And I'll acknowledge that when I took media law with him, I made a C, and I was happy to get the C.
He really was. He was the. He was and is the best, and he is my role model for how to challenge students and how to care for students. Because it, you know, he didn't do it out of any kind of hostility. He did it because he cared for his students deeply, and he's one of my heroes.
Well, I also want to note that Bruce Sharkey, a friend of mine, 82 years old, passed away last Saturday. He died with his family at his side. But to show you the kind of people who come to Louisiana to work in higher education and stay, Hugh Buckingham used to call it the brain remain rather than the brain drain. But he, Dr. Sharkey earned his undergraduate degree and master's degrees in landscape architecture from the University of California at Berkeley. He was from Los Angeles. He worked professionally in Los Angeles, San Francisco, Winnipeg, and then became the mastermind of the 800-mile oil pipeline project in Alaska, and was the co-founder and first private landscape firm in Anchorage. And then he comes to LSU, and he stays. As he was head of the landscape department for more than a decade, but he came in 1990. He retired in 2021. That's 31 years. And those are the kinds of people who often don't get the acclaim they should. But I'm sure he had great influence and immense impact on the lives of those he taught.
Oh, I know he did, and I've heard about some of it. And I know there are dozens and dozens and dozens of people just like him all across this campus who came here from other places, fell in love with Louisiana, fell in love with LSU, have risen through the ranks, and they're so incredibly valuable to this state and to this institution. And what worries me is that I think that because of the inability to pay those people what they deserve, there's been a real loyalty tax to people who do stay here. The way you usually get more pay in higher education is you move somewhere else, and when you stay, you don't get that. And so we've got to do a better job of paying those people what they deserve and rewarding their loyalty instead of taxing it.
We just visited with Jeff Landry, and he, like other candidates, is accenting crime and education and the economy and things like that in Louisiana. But when we talk about education, we're usually not talking about higher education. And as we know, under Governor Jindal, higher education was cut dramatically. King Alexander, the former president at LSU, said he had 13 budget cuts in his tenure, and that was largely under Bobby Jindal. So these gubernatorial candidates, should that be a major focus of voters as they go to the polls as to whether they will support higher education?
I believe it should be, and I believe it's not just because we want to educate our young people better and we want to keep them here. Of course, we do want to do all that, but I also think that the schools need to do a better job of tying what they do to the economy and to the social well-being of these communities. I think I spent some time in North Carolina this summer and saw how those universities, and from Duke to UNC to University of North Carolina State and others, have really changed the landscape of that state and made it, you know, one of the more impressive places in the South. And in many cases, and in the real driver of that revitalization and that energy has been the research and the talent coming out of those universities. We could have that here. We just have chosen not to make our universities that important to the economy and to our general society in this state.
Mary in Kenner asks about Bobby Jindal. I mentioned him when he was governor. He wanted to merge Southern University of New Orleans with the University of New Orleans. I don't think any future governor is going to go that route, but should they? Should we consider mergers, asks Mary.
Well, you know, that's maybe we should, but politically, I think it's just a non-starter. It's just not going to happen. It's, mm-hmm. it's a way to really, I think, undermine support for higher education, even though I think a lot of it makes sense. We're just too balkanized, and everybody's defending their own turf. That's one of the problems I think LSU has had over the years, is that they're, you know, if you're in Monroe, Ruston, Natchitoches, Lake Charles, Thibodeau, Hammond, if you're representing those people in the legislature, you really have a vested interest in funding your universities better than LSU. And the flagship gets a lot of attention, but it sometimes doesn't get the funding it needs to be able to call itself a true flagship.
Let's take a few callers, but please be concise with Bob. Hiller Moore is on deck. Patricia in Baton Rouge. Good morning, Patricia.
Good morning. I was told, Professor Mann, that you helped get a ceiling repaired in Life Sciences building, and I appreciate that. And I would have to say, from what I've heard from professors, that they don't complain about the salary so much, is that Life Sciences has had so many power outages and, you know, AC problems.
All right. The physical plant at several buildings, including the library. Bob, that's been a passion of yours. Is it getting better?
I think it's getting maybe marginally better, but not a lot. I mean, I think that there's still a whole host of problems. I hear about them all the time. People send them to me and tell me about them, and I haven't noticed a marked decline in the number of problems that I'm hearing about on this campus. There's just not the money to deal with them. So mostly what the university can do is patch these holes, not actually repair them in a permanent way. So it's these mm-hmm. problems are going to persist until we make serious right. investments into the capital improvements that are needed here.
Barry in Mid-City Baton Rouge. Barry, go for it. You're on with Bob.
Good morning. Thank you. Good morning. I'd like to ask your guest if LSU is an academic university or an athletic university.
What about the influence of athletics?
Well, I like to joke that it's a football team that has a really good history department and a really good journalism school.
we want a university the football team can be proud of.
Yeah, exactly. I think that we demand excellence on the athletic side of the campus. We don't really demand it on the other side, even though I think...
All right, we got to roll. But thank you, Bob. We'll be back with Hiller Moore. This is Jim Inkster. You're listening to Talk Louisiana on WWNO 89.9 New Orleans and WRKF 89.3 Baton Rouge. 877-217-5757. That's your number as we head in the final quarter hour with District Attorney Hiller Moore, who's the DA of the largest parish in Louisiana, East Baton Rouge, and is a native of what used to be the largest parish, Orleans. He went to Brother Martin High School before he sauntered off to LSU and Southern Law School, and he is a Democrat. In fact, many were courting him to run for governor. It didn't happen, but he largely, through the years, has been on the same side, with some exceptions, of Governor John Bel Edwards, and sometimes they have collided on criminal issues. But one of those that now is in the forefront is Governor Edwards' push at the final juncture of his two-term odyssey as governor to have 20 prisoners awaiting execution receive commutation. So this is now a proceeding that is headed for the courts, and Hiller Moore, I understand there's something that could happen as early as next week.
So yes, first of all, it's now 56.
20 so all 56.
Set, 20 have been set, 56 have applied, so that's the number. First of all, also, I want to mention that I have nothing but respect for the governor. You know, we do disagree on some things, but this is one that we do, and I have total respect for the parole board and the process that has been in place. So this is not about whether you're for or against the death penalty. Our petition is simply that they have not followed their own rules and procedures, and it appears that they've been put in a very bad political situation by the governor asking them to expedite these hearings. That is, jump over 440 other folks that are non-capital defendants and put these 56 in front of them and without following the rules and procedures and open laws meetings.
Well, Thursday is a court hearing. What happens at that point?
So our petition was the first that was filed, and we filed that 2 weeks ago. It was assigned to Judge Don Johnson. He set the matter for an injunction hearing this Thursday at 9 o'clock. We've already issued subpoenas, and we're prepared to go forward with our trial on the injunction.
Well, you and the governor have much in common. You both are devout Catholics. In fact, these are people who not only go to church on Sundays and holy days, they often go to church during the week, and they adhere to what they believe is authority from a higher power. And the governor says that he believes now that this is morally wrong and that legally it is flawed, that we have executed people who were innocent, that we don't expedite this. We don't have a case in which people get the same punishment for the same crime. All of those have merit, I believe, but you believe that some of these crimes are so heinous that they warrant the ultimate punishment.
Correct.
But how do you come to that judgment based on the fact that you are, I think, quote, pro-life, but in this case you believe there's a time and a place for the state to take a life?
So, yeah, despite being Catholic and what religion teaches and what you believe, when I took the oath, I didn't take it as a Catholic or, I guess I'm a Democrat, but I didn't take it as a party. I just took it as the person to follow the law. And all I'm asking is that they follow the law. If not, do away with the death penalty. And we've tried, there have been people that have tried to do away with it and have not been successful. It's apparently the will of the people, and I serve the people. And, yes, these cases are particularly heinous. I'm not sure if you're able to watch any of the news stories with the victims representing their families. Warwick Dunn, for one. And then painfully, this Wednesday, all the families that flew in from around the state and other states that came to talk about what happened to their loved ones, they're bad. So not only do these people want to get commuted, they want to have their death sentence to another letter sentence, which means life. But from there, they're not giving up their appeals. They're not saying I'm innocent. They're not saying, I'm guilty, and please give me life, and you'll never hear from me again. They want to keep their appeals. And so this is very frustrating to these families, particularly now at Thanksgiving and Christmas time when these are set. So it's really troubling to these families, and it's opened up their wounds all over again.
877-217-5757. We haven't executed many people. In fact, in the last 20 years.
18 to 20, yes. One.
One.
One who asked to be executed.
And other than that, the legal situation is such that these people on death row can dodge and weave, and we have problems with the chemicals that are now used. They're not always effective. And there have been been cases in which we've had this bizarre situation in which an inmate is being put to death, and then they have to rush him to the hospital to revive him because the drugs didn't work. And
sure. I think you can always find stories in whatever system states use, but I think our issues probably more political than they are factual.
Well, you were an investigator, worked on the other side before you became DA, and I'm sure were involved in some capital cases. Yes. Do you think on the whole it's a good thing for...
Yes, on a whole it is. Only if we were able to do it quicker. When I say quicker, I mean justice should be swift, but it cannot be at a pace to where people's rights are looked over. And so I don't mean it in that sense, but... For us to go through in Louisiana appeals of 20 to 25 years, which we're on now in a lot of these cases, that's ridiculous. And it's very hurtful to the families. And so it becomes ineffective once you delay it that long, and the cost of money involved is expensive. But I think it has its place if it's done properly.
877-217-5757 and talk at talklouisiana.org. In our remaining time with East Baton Rouge Parish District Attorney, native of New Orleans, graduate of Brother Martin High School, Hiller Moore, David in Atlanta. David, you're on Talk Louisiana.
Hi, good morning, Mr. Moore.
Hey, Dave.
I might be incorrect in my information. If I am, I'm sorry. Did you have anything to do with the redistricting bill, the congressional redistricting bill?
No, sir.
Okay, well, then I apologize for my phone call.
That's right. It sounds like you have a good New Orleans accent. How you doing, Dave?
Well, I'm from New Orleans. I grew up in the French Quarter. I lost my home in Katrina. I lived in New Orleans East. My home had 8 feet of water in it, and I'm totally blind.
Oh, gosh.
So I moved to Atlanta. I love New Orleans, and I miss it. But, and by the way, I had a non-emergency yesterday, and I called the Atlanta Police Department, and a very nice officer was here within 30 minutes. I think that speaks well of the Atlanta Police Department. And did you know, despite what I've heard on conservative radio, the district attorney, Miss Willis, murders are down 40% year-to-date in Atlanta.
Well, they're also down in Baton Rouge, but yeah, they were high to begin with. And
it appears to be that murders are down fairly overall in cities, not on all. But surely Baton Rouge's murders this year were down around 20%. And that's
what about
down,
New Orleans?
20% from the year before. I think New Orleans is down. However, their numbers
are still
high. Look good.
And as Jeff Landry just said a few moments ago on this, New Orleans was recently listed, unfortunately, as one of the 10 most violent cities in the world.
Correct.
In the world.
It generally it has been, I think, for the last 30 years.
Do you go back home every now and then?
I try not to, but I do when I have to, but it's...
It is a great city.
It is different.
It is a great city.
Yes.
But a guy who grew up on Elysian Fields, as you did, I can't imagine you not getting some nostalgia when you go back to that area.
Yeah.
There is no place like it.
Yeah, go to court, go back to the high school to see how big that place is and different good events, family members there.
Well, Hiller Moore told me back in the day, the boys at Brother Martin, and when they had a score to settle, they would go to the cemetery next
across
door.
The street. The biggest fight I ever saw was Rick Roby, who played for the Celtics. Was and I forget who they were.
6'11", Rick Roby.
He was very.
He's fighting
big
in the cemetery.
There was a lot of blood in the cemetery, but he made it back to basketball practice.
Matthew in Covington, you're on with Hiller Moore. Good morning, Matthew.
Good morning. I want to go back to y'all spoke briefly about it. Prisoners not actually getting executed. And the reason for that is that our law only allows for lethal injection and we can't get the drugs.
Yes.
And I want to know, why don't we change the law to change the methods of execution?
Yeah, that's a good question. And that, again, that's why I said that this is more of a political issue and not a factual one. If you change the procedures, then obviously things can change quickly. Some states have firing squads. That would surely make it easier, whether Louisiana will vote for that is a different question.
James and Metairie. James, you're on with Hiller Moore. Good morning.
Well, good morning, Jim. Good morning, your guests. I have a question, maybe a little bit off the wall, but is there any mechanism in the law, procedures, et cetera, that I cannot imagine having a more miserable existence than being on death row, let's say in solitary confinement. Is there any mechanism that a person on death row, convicted of capital murder, could request to be executed in Louisiana?
I think Gerald Bordelon.
He's the only
that.
One. Yeah.
So what's what all of these death row inmates are missing because they're still appealing after 25 years? They don't have a death date. They don't have a death certificate. And if they receive the death certificate, then the state could move forward with that. But nobody is clamoring to get a death certificate that are in this group, and that is the big difference.
A listener asks, why do you think John Bell Edwards, I know you can't read his mind, but it is curious that he made this revelation about his personal beliefs in the final days of his administration.
I think the man's honest, and I think that this is what it's finally he come to with him. But I do question the timing of it, and because this process takes a year to a year and a half. And the timing, once he said it and once it became public, we had 56 petitions on our doorstep on the same day. This seemed to be an orchestrated matter.
Well, thanks for coming in. Again, on short notice is Hiller
Always.
Moore. And Hiller Moore is playing hurt today. He looks like he was in a rumble, but he told me, and I believe the DA, that he fell on the floor. And I've done that, and he's got the scars to show for it right now. So thank you.
Fell on a counter. Thanks.
Back next week. Stay tuned.